Welcome to Mrigashira, a podcast that communicates with communicators. This podcast is a tribute to our fantastic fellow professionals, colleagues, and friends. I'm Charu Raizada, and this podcast is brought to you in association with DigiTales. Today marks the 50th episode of Mrigashira, and we celebrate this milestone with Dr. Nirmalya Kumar, one of the leading marketing scholars in the world. A professor of marketing at Singapore Management University, Professor Kumar has produced some of the most influential academic research on the topic of interfirm relationships. He has also written multiple books on leadership, branding, private label strategy, global marketing, and spoken at several TED Talks on marketing and innovation. Professor Kumar has worked with over 50 Fortune 500 companies in 60 countries, has been included consistently in the Thinkers 50 listings of the top 50 management thinkers in the world, a prolific case writer, passionate about art, the list is endless. With many changes in business models, constant shifts in consumer behavior, it's important to note that skills that made companies successful in the past may not be as relevant in the future. Importance of communication research as a guide to identify and explore many interrelated elements is gaining ground. In today's episode of Mrigashira, we speak to Professor Nirmalya Kumar to get a better understanding of the changing consumer behavior and the value of building a research culture. Stay with us on Mrigashira. Hello, Professor Kumar. Allow me to congratulate you for being awarded the 2021 Mahajan Award for Lifetime Contributions to Marketing Strategy Research by the American Marketing Association. Thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Mrigashira. Thank you so much. In today's conversation, our attempt is to get some insights into the constantly fluctuating consumer behavior in the COVID 2.0 world and the value of building a research culture. So, Professor Kumar, allow me to begin by asking you something which has been bothering me. We have been talking about purpose-led brands for almost a decade, and now the discussions around purpose-led brands seem to be flowing through our ears. The term is often misunderstood, and a lot of companies do not really seem to get their head around it. What does brand purpose mean to you?
Yes, what has happened is that, you know, earlier, we are not talking many decades ago, people chose brands based on simply the quality, you know, the logic of the brand. And then, of course, over the past, after post-World War II, especially as consumers became more wealthy, we started looking for both the logic and the magic. What we called logic was, you know, what is the functional performance of the brand, and magic is what is the emotional performance of the brand, which is really how does it make the customer feel, either to themselves or for other people. So that became your unique selling proposition of a brand, we said, has to be beyond just simply the quality or the functional performance. It has to also encompass what we call this magic, which is the emotional connect to the customer. Having said that, now, of course, as we have evolved 70 years later from the Second World War, we have become much more comfortable. We have become much more developed. Consumers have become more aspirational. And the younger consumers, of course, are changing in terms of what they see as the fundamental challenges. After the World War II, the fundamental challenges was really to rebuild the society, to rebuild the war-torn populations. And so people were very concerned about, you know, moving to a better economic lifestyle. Now people tend to be more satiated with their economic lifestyle, so they look to higher purposes. And so one of the higher purposes they're looking at is that consumers are very worried today about what is the future of our planet. And in this future of the planet, there are many different concerns that fall into this big bucket future of the planet, including, of course, what is now called popularly ESG, you know, environmental, social justice, and ethical concerns, governance concerns. Right. And when we talk to consumers, what we are finding is that 65% of consumers say they would like to buy purpose-driven brands. By what they mean by purpose-driven brands is that the brand should stand for something more than simply functional performance in the category. It should actually try to make the world a better place, not only for the current generation, but also for future generations. And this, of course, is most reflected in two groups of people, of consumers. The first group of consumers, I'll say, is developed versus under emerging markets. So the developed market consumers are especially concerned about this more than the emerging market consumers. But even within the developed and emerging market, the younger consumers, the what we call the millennials and the Gen Z consumers, are especially concerned about this, which makes perfect sense if you think about it, because they are going to live most of their life in the future. So of course, they are more concerned about what is going to happen to the future of this planet and to the environment and to what we are handing over to the next generation. And interestingly, we are seeing this not only in the developed countries, which I said, where you see it in more in spades, but we are also seeing this in Southeast Asia and China even. Last year in JD Power, some of the fastest growing brands were those that had a sustainability claim to them, even on JD Power. On JD.com, which is, of course, the largest internet sales site in China. So what I'm trying to say is that this is not a concern that is going away. It is going to become more important in the future, because as the millennials and Gen Z become more powerful, more economically dominant, they are demanding, asking for this. So, and as I said, 65%. And if you ask millennials and Gen Z, they'll tell you that they see environment as a bigger concern than health or employment, which is amazing. You would think that these young people are most concerned about jobs, but especially in the developed world, when we do surveys, we find that they put the environment sometimes above employment and health in their concerns for the future.
Okay, that's interesting to know that environment above health and employment. Your 5-point guide for communicators, you know, to help brands in shaping their purpose, because marketers, researchers, communicators, how can they help brands in shaping their purpose?
So let me just put some background to this. The background to this, I'll put it very briefly, is that even though 65% of consumers say they want to buy purpose-driven brands, only about 20 to 25% actually do. And what stops them from doing it when you go deeper into the data is that while people say they would like to buy these brands, they're worried about three big problems with these brands. They feel that sustainability comes with some negative cost or associations. First is that it's going to cost them more if they buy more purpose-driven sustainable brands. Second, they believe it'll be less convenient to use or buy. Thirdly, they believe it'll have less efficacy or quality. So the triple threat, what stops people from consuming sustainable or purpose-driven brands, is cost, convenience, and quality. So if, as brands, of course, then if we want consumers to, give their custom to such sustainable brands, we have to think about how to reduce these three negative associations of cost, convenience, and quality for the customer. Because customers believe that, you know, that more sustainable brands are going to be more expensive, they're going to be less convenient, and they're going to have less efficacy or less functional performance. And in terms of price premium, our surveys seem to indicate that 37% of consumers say they're willing to pay more. But how much more is the question? And of course, in service, it's easy to say that I'll pay more. But even then, even in service, we find that people are willing to pay about 5% more. At 10%, most of the interest in buying these sustainable brands disappears. So even if we are going to have a price penalty for consuming these sustainable products and brands, we have to ensure that the price penalty stays within 5%. So that's my first point. The second point is that, you know, what at Unilever we found was, when we were working over there with sustainability, is that what the company does matters somewhat in making a more sustainable future. But the choices that consumers make around the product also adds a lot. And 70% of the sustainability of a product depends on the choices a consumer makes. Let me give you an example. Right. So yes, we can sell them more sustainable laundry detergent. And we can do lots of things in our supply chain at Unilever to make the laundry detergent more sustainable and more environmentally friendly. Still, 70% of how much impact that will have on the environment depends on the choices the customer makes, whether they choose the most sustainable product or not, how much water and energy they use while washing their clothes with that product, how whether they recycle the empty packaging afterwards or not. So what I'm trying to say is that as brands, we need to educate our customers that yes, sustainability depends on us and the choices we make in our supply chain and in the product development and in the products we sell. But also please remember that a large part of the sustainability effect of our brands depends on the choices you as a consumer make. Do you recycle our packaging? Do you use efficient systems which are associated with using our products? And do you make the right choices when you see when you are in the marketplace in choosing the products and the categories? So that's the second part of it. The third thing I like to say is that, you know, we have found that you can actually change consumer behavior to more sustainable choices, but you have to think deeply about it. And one of the things is that most people choose sustainable products either to reduce their guilt of consumption or to signal to other people what kind of human being they are. So we, for example, one Canadian city found that they could increase recycling in the garbage if instead of having the, you know, the dark garbage bags, you use transparent garbage bags. Because in Canada and in the US, people have to take out their garbage bag and put it on the curbside in front of their house from where the garbage man picks it up. If you have dark bags, you don't know what is inside the bag. But if you have transparent bags, then everybody in the neighborhood can see if you're throwing things that could be recycled in your garbage. And that increased recycling by about 30 to 40%. So this is another way in which we can encourage customers to make better choices with respect to the environment. Also, you know, you must have gone and stayed at a hotel, Charu. And when you stay at a hotel, you see they always ask you to recycle your clothes, your towels. And when they ask you to recycle the towels, they tell you, here's a card, put it, leave it on the bathroom if you want us to recycle your towels. What one hotel found was when that card, you know, which says recycle the towels, is instead of putting it in the bathroom, you tell the your guest to put it on the door of the room, outside. Mm-hmm. Recycling of the towels increases dramatically because now when people are walking by the rooms, they see how many doors have put their, you know, that card outside versus, you know, when it's in the, what you call a bathroom, it's a private choice. When you put it outside on the door, it becomes a more public choice. So more public choices leads to better and decisions from an environmental perspective by consumers. And the last thing I'll say is that we find that stressing the environmental aspect of a brand helps, but it only gets you the believers. It's better to stress the functional and positive attributes like design and performance like Tesla does and have the environmental thing in the background, because that's more likely to lead to your brand being chosen. So yes, you have the environmental thing, but that should not be a sledgehammer with which you hit the customer, because the customer is in any case worried about performance and cost. So what you need to do is reassure the customer first about your performance and cost, and then have the environment as the third leg of this pillar.
Yeah. So as a subtle leg, which is very important leg, but subtly communicated to the customer, because at the end of the day, he or she is buying the product for what the product stands for at the right price point, which is very important, right?
You stress the sustainability angle too much, then they start thinking there must be a cost penalty or a quality penalty. That's why they're stressing the environment so much.
Right. So that's because that's how we human beings are wired at the end of the day. And I think we're going to take a long time to, you know, really change the way we think. Brands need to adapt to the way human minds think. You've talked about consumer behavior. You've talked about how consumers are looking at things and they are getting influenced. But, you know, in the last 1.5 years, we've seen that there's been a constant shift. The second half of 2021, how do you think the pandemic will continue to influence behavior of consumers? And what does it mean? What kind of changes do we see for brands coming up?
So, you know, to first decide whether this is a one-time change or a more permanent change. So I think there are some things for which it's a one-time change and things will go back to normal. There are other things for which there's a permanent change. And I think, you know, for example, I think business class travel is something that's not going to come back anytime soon, as people have now been forced to realize that Zoom works. Okay, it doesn't work as well, but for 90% of the cases, I can do with Zoom instead of having to travel and spare my body, spare the cost for the company, and spare the environment. So I think that some things like business class travel will take a long time to ever return to the levels it was. On the other hand, other things were snapped back very fast into place. So going out to eat, travel in general, leisure travel, that will all come back rather fast. Once, in fact, it might even come back with a vengeance once things open up, because people have been deprived for so long. So we have to consider those things that, there's a permanent change like business travel versus those things which is a temporary change because of the pandemic. But once the pandemic goes away, people will return to normal. Three kinds of categories. There are categories where, like business travel, the demand has gone away and I don't think it's going to come back anytime soon. Then there are categories where the demand has gone away, but it will return with a vengeance, what we call revenge consumption. Eating out, leisure travel is going to fall in that category. And then there are other categories where the demand will fall after the pandemic ends, but it will not fall back to where it was before the pandemic, which is things like cleaning products, sanitizers, face masks, because people have now realized that there are some benefits to that and a certain percentage of people will continue to stay with them, even though the need after the pandemic may go away.
Got it. Professor Kumar, one last question. You've been very closely associated with research. What advice would you give communicators on building a research culture and why is it so important?
As I always tell people, everybody can have their own opinion, but you can't have your own data. So I think research is very important because we would like to have debates that are informed by data. And to have, because whenever you're trying to discuss anything with related to customers, their behavior, all the future, people will always differ in their opinions. And reasonable people in a room will differ. And the more data that we have, the more likely we are able to resolve these differences and disagreements by shedding light rather than heat on the argument. And the more likely we are to make decisions that are more robust in terms of their quality. So I'm a very big believer in data. Of course, at some stage, you have to interpret the data for sure. You have to use your judgment for sure, because the future is never like just like the present or the past. But having said that, I believe that a research culture is very important for anybody who wants to build brands. And so you will see that the top brands, they invest a lot on research. You'll see good managers invest a lot on data. And now, of course, data has become plentiful. It's more easily available. It's cheaper than it ever was because of, the internet and the amount of data that exists. And the artificial intelligence is very good at, sieving through a lot of data and finding a few nuggets or insights. Having said that, I'm a big believer that, again, you have to marry the data analytics of artificial intelligence with the judgment of managers to get the best out of the data, to get the best out of the manager, both.
Right.
So we need both. We need a mix of machine and man. There's not going to be any more things about when is man better. It's always going to be when is man equipped with machine better.
No, absolutely. I think you said that very correctly, that experience does count, and data, if you're not able to interpret the data, it has no meaning. And certainly it's time that we move towards having more informed debates using data and building better brands. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks a lot for joining us on Megashira.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Hope you enjoy listening to Megashira, a podcast for communication folks. Do share your suggestions and feedback on megashira@digitales.co.in. Have a great week ahead and do not forget to tune in next week. Adios.